From the roots up, CIUT 89.5 FM, Toronto.
Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host. We're going to be talking to a really an important political figure in Canada, in my view. His name is Alex Tirrell. He's the leader of the Green Party of Quebec. And I'll just start off by saying, you know, we'll start with solutions. We'll work towards the problems. The solution for Canada, we know we're in the grip of a anti-China hysteria at the moment and contemplating providing more weapons and perhaps bodies to the conflict in Ukraine. We need to talk about the solutions which are absent in Canadian politics. We need peace advocates. We need people who believe and advocate, stand before the public and try to get themselves elected and hopefully elected, who argue for an independent Canadian foreign policy. We require negotiations with other countries, and particularly at the moment we need a peace plan to try to bring this matter in Ukraine to an end, and we don't have anyone who does that at all, except, I'm going to say, Alex Tirrell. He is consistent. He's been of this opinion for some time. It will be, that'll be probably in about 30 minutes. About 5:30, we expect to talk to Alex, but I think it's important to get it on the table that what we need at the moment is the type of advocacy that he provides. And not only is he an advocate, he speaks for an organization that has some history of some integrity in raising all the necessary and right issues, and has, of course, put himself forward as a candidate. And it does seem to be, and there is a little stirring around. We see it with the February 19 demonstration in the United States, and we have one coming up March 18 in Washington. And the people who are doing this, bless their hearts, they're really on the right path. The right thing to do is to challenge the current policy of the administration of Joe Biden and of NATO. They're going to have to think seriously about putting people forward. And I think it was one of the reasons you had to be impressed that people who have reputations and for being able to be elected while holding points of view that are contrary to what I would call U.S.-NATO doctrine were able to, over time, hold on to congressional seats. Dennis Kucinich being one, and Tulsi Gabbard another. Cynthia McKinney also participated in the events of the 19th. I'm going to be very interested to see who attends on the 18th, but the challenge actually is to give the American people and Canadian people an opportunity to take the road of peace. I could put this another way. We need a Mexican foreign policy. Mexico is part of North America, and they have a very popular, this is very important to underline, a very popular leader of the country, Mr. President Obrador. And we say this often on the show, but I'm going to keep on repeating. Mexico is part of a North American trade agreement. Meetings happen periodically between the leaders, but Mexico is part of North America. Incidentally, they're part of the colonial substructure, once having been Spain, and then of course part of North America, the Northeastern was French, and the Americans are actually the British, who now call themselves the Americans. But it's so you had the collision of empires. But the Mexico has inherited too a revolutionary tradition from many years of struggle, and most of those years of struggle having to cope with, contend with U.S. hegemony. It has made them into, a paragon. That's too strong a word, isn't it? It made them into an example of what Canada should be doing. In Canada, we debate whether or not to buy the F-35 jet. In Mexico, there's no debate. They don't want it. They don't have it. They're not a member of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which is curious, isn't it? Because if you talk to Canadian politicians, I mean, NATO is part of our DNA. That's who we are. And we're continually talking about our security. If we were independent, like Mexico, we probably wouldn't be worried about such things, because Mexico does not have this mad, angry, hostile, paranoid view of Russia. And it doesn't have the mad, hostile, paranoid view of China. They get along with these countries. They don't. This is not a matter of intimacy. It's just that they trade with them. They are. They don't join in the Holy Alliance to make all the rest of the world follow McDonald's and Starbucks. You remember the article by Thomas Friedman years ago saying that wherever you see a McDonald's, you know, that's where democracy and that's where our values have clearly put down roots. Mexico has its own foreign policy. This was emphasized, by the way, yesterday in a speech by President Obrador, in which he talked about the overbearing attitude of the U.S. And we've said on this show, and I'll remind you, that Mexico, Obrador has said he's going to take it as his personal task and crusade to lift the sanctions that the United States has placed on Cuba. No, there's no politician in Canada would dare say that. I mean, that is just, forget it. That is not an opening gambit. You cannot go that road. But Obrador has also said he's not supplying any military equipment to Ukraine because he doesn't wish his country to be involved in that issue. He is one of those who would be on the list, the short list of two. If you want to negotiate an end to the conflict, which any sane individual would, then you, countries like Mexico, countries like India, and yes, China could be help resolve this. I think at the moment the list is the Pope and China. I'm not aware. Oh, I have to take that back. Perhaps President Erdogan of Turkey. So Canada does not have that, which brings us to our little problem, which is quite amazing to be living through. And this is the hysteria that is being whipped up against China based on zilch, nada. What we have is people saying they know things, including the prime minister, when they don't have any actual evidence. And they cherry-pick the subject. We're talking about, they say, foreign interference, but I notice that all they ever think they're talking about is China. There are many countries who have ambassadors and who have friends, and they have organizations that stand up for the home country, places where they're from, and they wish to get the Canadian policy in alignment. they think it would be better, you know, relations with the country, country X. But in this case, it's entirely a story of a demonic model without evidence. One of the things I did notice reading the Globe and the guy we've spoken of before, Scooper Cooper, is that one you can gather from the small quotes that have been taken from what are alleged to be documents. None of us have seen the documents. But the quotes taken from them look to me like evidence of spying by, I guess, CSIS, on China, on Chinese embassy. There are laws, by the way, in international relations. It isn't automatic that you can. There are limits to how much you can spy on another country's embassy, et cetera. The U.S. is very touchy about these things. You remember when the Americans thought that the Cubans were trying to drive them insane by putting funny sounds on their embassy? And we lived about 2 years with this story. The last known suspect turned out it was crickets. But I think they've abandoned the crickets theory, and they have formally said it actually wasn't anything. I mean, they can't, they don't now believe that they were the target of some special idea about, you know, bothering them. Canadians, by the way, joined in and said they were getting headaches too. Canada never wants to be too far behind. When America has a headache, Canadians say, oh yeah, we're starting to have headaches too. And Uncle Sam coughed and people here start to cough. But talking of this scandal, so-called, I think the scandal is that a source supposed to be alleged to be somebody in CSIS, has been providing documents and analysis, discussing secret documents and top secret documents with media that is aligned with the Conservative Party of Canada. And the source is in violation, or they tell us, actually the media, the Globe and Mail, and I believe the others all say we're not identifying the individual, or I don't know if they make it plural, we're not identifying them because they may be in violation of the Official Secrets Act. So the only culprit, the only buddy who's actually, we know, seems to be in violation of Canadian law is an individual or a group within CSIS that is providing catnip to the conservative media when they feel like it. And if you want a scandal, I would say if CSIS can't even find that person and stop them, then CSIS may as well give up, because here we have somebody who's has no authority to be doing what they're doing. They are creating havoc in Canadian political culture. We've reached the point when names are being named based on a source who's not identified. This is the lowest form of meddling. So let's identify who's meddling in Canadian politics. It is either CSIS or someone who works for them. Because since this individual's, I have to keep saying, I don't know, maybe it's a group. Individuals are meddling because they are providing, I'll say it again, political catnip for people who want to satisfy their hysteria about the People's Republic of China. And what makes this game work is that everybody in political life in Canada every party to the last person, except Alex Terrell. Maybe we'll ask him. Maybe Elizabeth May, but everybody else is competing to show who is the most anti-Chinese, anti-China, and by the way, it verges, yes, on anti-Chinese because they keep speaking of the community as though it was a homogenous group that is somehow easily swayed, when actually Chinese Canadians, like all the rest of Canadians, come from different classes, different levels of education, different religious beliefs, different regions. And I don't know if I've asked it before, but I'm going to do it again on the show today. They speak of interference. There is a place, it's a region of China, known as Taiwan, where there is a very ambitious political movement, deeply allied with American foreign policy and right-wing Americans largely, who I assume would like to influence Canadian policy. I assume, I don't know. And of course, there are people who are from Hong Kong, and there are people from Tibet, etc. So, and yet, the way this is written about and discussed, it's as though we have a targeted group, and we all have to kind of look at them differently. And look, if you do that, I will cite you Canadian history and American history. Look at how the Japanese Canadians were viewed. Look at how Ukrainian Canadians were viewed at the beginning of World War I, and this tendency to homogenize or decide that to whatever people's backgrounds, they are somehow suspect. This is where we're being led by an unidentified source. And we're hearing people say, and it seems to be a mantra. If you watch the regular night show where you have the host and then the three giggling, maybe four giggling panelists, and some of them really, seem to have three sort of humorous people. Then they have one who's too serious by half, who is always identified as a tough old veteran journalist who's just going to get it off their chest, you know. That's the kind of a little show they have organized. And but the host always says, the opening line and closing line, we have to protect our democracy. Well, how about protecting us from someone who leaks secret information to one politically slanted group of conservatives, basically? How about that one? Somebody protect us from that. But there is no talk of that protection from that quarter. It's just very curious because no one knows them. No one has actually seen the documents. At this point, it's the way lawyers do it in courtrooms. You better produce your actual evidence, and you better produce the individual who's making who's stirring us up and causing us to throttle each other. If you watch Parliament, it's turning into a dangerous circus, and everybody grandstanding. The NDP's among the absolute worst because they're all crediting something that they know nothing about. And if there's not going to be disclosure, if you're not going to be clarity as to who's behind it, then the rest of us have no reason. And a matter of fact, if we have any self-respect, we should say, I'm not going to join accusations against anybody. Our former mayor, David Miller, called this situation a smear. It is a smear. And I feel pained for those politicians who people are using their names and saying, oh, it might be this one, might be that one. That is a disgrace. Nobody has any right to say any such thing, because all they're doing is following this in the direction of somebody in the darkness. Last week I called him Whispering Smith. But Whispering Smith is dropping names and pointing. And it's really, again, they use the metaphor about the cat. You can get these little laser lights, and you can flash it, put it around on the floor, and the cat will chase it. And at the moment, that's what's going on. They're just throwing the little light around, and everybody's chasing. The foundation of all of this, which we should be combating, is the policy of following the diktat of Joe Biden, Donald Trump, President Obama, who decided to throw the gauntlet down because they're in a panic as a great power, an exceptional power, as each of them says, as if they're taking an oath with their hand on the Bible. They are exceptional. They're the ones who decided that China was too successful and hadn't committed any crimes except growth, development, trade, and they decided this is becoming a little embarrassing. So they threw down the gauntlet. And Canada did not want to be part of that originally. I'll take you to 2015 when Justin Trudeau was elected. We were going to actually develop and have good relations with this developing country, China. We were going to have good relations. And a struggle went on to do that. Until President Trump made the decision to order Canada to arrest an officer of a major international company on Canadian soil, and to hold that person because a court in New Jersey or something wanted them. And this has been joked about. The former national security advisor to Trump said that Trump kidded him about how they had picked up Meng Wanzhou. And they had some odd little story about she's the daughter of so-and-so. And in other words, the equivalent, I think it was, of Trump's daughter. The horror in the story is that Canada did it. And to watch the Toronto Star and all the others, and the liberals of one side type or another, and the NDP say, we have to stand up to China. Are you kidding? We committed an unspeakable political offense. It's over. That was the earthquake. What we're living with now is the aftershock. The earthquake was absolutely carrying out orders by our master to capture a businesswoman who had not committed no crime in her company. It was a very welcome company at that point in Canada. Nobody, by the way, ever showed that they had done anything wrong. And they collaborated, Canadian intelligence, if you can call it that, was spying and watching her movements. And so they made sure, since they'd been given the order, they made sure that she caught her flight, the one, so that they could be sure to also stop her. We've all seen, used to watch the film of her coming in at the airport. They took her personal, they took her tablet, they took her phone, lying to her about why they were taking it. They gave it to the FBI. And here we talk. Here's the title. I mean, the Globe and Mail, Star, CBC. They say foreign interference. They took us by the scruff of the neck and told us what to do, and we did it. That's called foreign interference. They made up their minds. They didn't ask Obrador in Mexico, because President Obrador in Mexico, he wouldn't have played ball. He would have said, hey, that's not my problem. That's nothing to do with me. I'm trying to do business with these people. But he can do that. So you want to look for foreign interference, do you? How about the fact that we're in Five Eyes? That's foreign interference. We share all of our intelligence. I'll bet the Americans don't share back, by the way. I bet they give orders. But Five Eyes, that's New Zealand, Australia, UK, US, and us. And they do it, Five Eyes. They share information. Somebody said, you know, we've been letting down the side. I watched a wag on the CBC, tough old journalist. He says, you know, the other members of Five Eyes are kind of disappointed in us. You know, we're not really tough enough against China. And you think about it, you say, we do carry out, you know, all these, every order practically that they give us. And if you think Five Eyes is disappointed that we're not sufficiently anti-China, maybe they're, I wonder what they think of the fact that we've been going on now for 2-3 weeks with an unnamed source who apparently is in violation of our Official Secrets Act, who is telling us things about Canadian politicians that are in the papers. This is Canadian intelligence doing this. Do you think the Five Eye gang is impressed with this? And would the Five Eye leadership be impressed that it is mentioned in the Globe and elsewhere that we are sharing our information on Canadian citizens with the Five Eyes group, plus, by the way, they also, the Globe and Mail report, plus Germany and the other, I think it must have been France, were sharing that. That's one of the things that they could pick up the paper and read. So assuming they have a halfway secure operation and they actually have it, let's call it a modicum of integrity, it must be fun for Five Eyes to read that we have a leaker who tells the talks about Five Eyes' work in Canada and how they join us in spying on Canadian citizens. It's a pretty impressive mess, I would say, and it's all traceable to Sinophobia, and that all the Sinophobia came because the United States told us that we couldn't have good relations with China. As simple as that. This is the Taylor Report. It is CIUT. And we have a couple of minutes to go. I'll just remind everybody that if you didn't know it, that a Canadian general was in Kiev, and anybody responsible for the fate of the Canadian people, their security, safety, et cetera, and their democracy, which has to be protected, ought to be concerned and asking, do we have a peace plan? Does anybody have one? Are we reaching out to parties that could bring an end to the conflict, or are we going to just see how close we can get to the fire without getting burned? That's an issue. Then there's that was a Canadian general with his name, Iyer. That's an odd, that's a appropriate name, isn't it? Mark Iyer. There's a Mark Milley, the U.S. general, was in Syria. We'll be closing on this note because U.S., which will, according to the people who say we go by rules-based international order, the United States is illegally occupying territory of Syria, killing Syrians. They arrived in force, and a top general visited them, which means they intend to stay, and they want to secure the border. In the name of fighting terrorism, no country has the right to invade another country in the name of fighting terrorism. The U.S. says its writ runs wherever it feels like, but nobody else is permitted to say that or do anything. U.S. forces should be out of Syria. Remember when Donald Trump got elected saying he was going to pull them out? So that was a lie. And Lastly, we have to provide humanitarian assistance to Syria, but that is blocked by a cold-blooded, cynical, hypocritical government in Ottawa, led by, of course, the master in Washington. This is the Taylor Report, CIUT. See you next week.